Welcome in. In this lesson, we're going to give a jungle or DNB kick a more human sense of weight, plus that crunchy sampler character that makes it feel alive, without wrecking the low end. So instead of a flat click and thump, we're building something that feels like it was pulled from an old sampler, pushed a little by hand, and dropped into a dense bassline groove with attitude. This is a really important skill in drum and bass, because the kick has two jobs at the same time. It needs to anchor the groove so the drop feels physical, but it also has to stay out of the way of the sub and bass line. If the kick gets too long, too wide, or too distorted in the wrong place, the whole low end gets muddy fast. So the big idea here is weight plus edge, not just loudness. We are keeping this beginner-friendly and using only Ableton Live Stock devices. Specifically, we'll lean on drum rack, sampler, saturator, EQ8, drum bus, compressor, and utility. By the end, you'll have a kick layer that feels tighter, gritter, and more human, while still sitting cleanly with a bass line. Let's start with a clean kick. Open a new MIDI track and load drum rack. Find a kick sample that already has a firm transient and a fairly short tail. If you don't have a perfect jungle kick, no stress. Just pick one that's clear, punchy, and not overly boomy or roomy. In drum and bass, especially around 170 plus BPM, you want kicks that move fast. Long tails can blur the rhythm and fight the sub. Now draw a simple 1-bar or 4-bar MIDI pattern. Keep it basic at first. Put a kick on beat 1, then maybe one extra kick before beat 3 if you want that jungle flavor. Leave space for the bass to answer. Don't try to make the whole groove fancy yet. First, we want a kick that has a solid job in the arrangement. Now for the trick that gives this lesson its character. Split the kick into body and crunch. Duplicate the kick inside the drum rack so you have two versions of the same hit. One version is going to stay mostly clean and provide the body. The other version is going to become the crunchy sampler layer. On that second chain, load the same sample into sampler and switch it to one-shot mode. For the crunchy chain, you can trim the start a tiny bit if there's extra silence at the front. Keep the volume lower than the main kick, usually by around 6 to 12 dB. At this stage, the crunchy layer is not the star. It's seasoning. It should be noticeable when muted, but not so loud that it takes over the hit. This layered approach matters, because classic jungle and early hardcore energy often came from sampled, resampled, slightly imperfect drum hits. That slightly rough edge helps the kick feel like it belongs in a break-driven track, rather than a clean pop or house drum pattern. Now let's humanize the feel a bit. A lot of beginner drum and bass programming ends up too grid perfect, and that can make the kick feel stiff. We want small timing contrast, not random chaos. A good beginner move is to use the groove pool very subtly, or just nudge a note or two by a tiny amount. I'm talking tiny here, like 5 to 15 milliseconds. You do not want to destroy the grid. You just want to soften the machine feel. If your pattern has a kick that leads into a bass response, try nudging that kick slightly earlier so the bass can slam in behind it. That little bit of anticipation can make the groove feel much more alive. And if you're using swing, keep it light. In DNB, too much swing on the kick can make the low end feel lazy instead of driving. Next, we shape the crunchy layer so it adds attitude without adding mud. Put EQ8 after the crunchy sampler chain. High pass it somewhere around 90 to 140 Hz so it stays out of the sub range. If it sounds boxy, gently dip around 250 to 400 Hz. If you want more attack, you can add a small boost in the 1.5 to 4k Hz area, but be careful. If the kick starts sounding sharp or cheap, back off the high end before you do anything else. The main idea is to keep the body in the body layer, and the texture in the texture layer. That separation is a big deal in drum and bass, because the bass and kick need a clean relationship in the low end. Now let's add saturation. On the crunchy layer, add saturator or drum bus. If you use saturator, analog clip is a great starting point. Try a drive amount around 2 to 6 dB, and then compensate with the output so the level doesn't jump too much. If you use drum bus, keep drive moderate, crunch fairly low to start, and boom mostly off for this lesson. You can bring the transients up a little if the kick needs more punch. And here's the important part. Distort the texture layer, not the whole kick. That's how you get grit without losing the low-end discipline. If you blend the crunchy chain in slowly and then mute it, you should miss it. That's the sweet spot. Now let's protect the bottom end. On the main kick chain, use EQ8 to remove unnecessary rumble. A gentle cut below 25 to 35 Hz is often enough. If there's mud, you can also trim a little around 180 to 300 Hz, but be careful not to hollow out the punch. Every kick is different, so trust your ears. Then put utility on the kick group and check mono, if the sample has any stereo spread. In drum and bass, kicks should almost always be centered. If the kick is wandering around in stereo, it can get blurry fast when the bass comes in. This is also where arrangement thinking matters. If your bass line is huge and sub-heavy, the kick needs to be tight enough to leave a pocket. Sometimes the fix is as simple as shortening the kick tail or reducing the amount of low-end drive. The goal is for the kick to feel massive without stealing the sub's job. Now let's add a little more human feel with velocity. In the MIDI clip, keep the main downbeat strong, then lower supporting kicks or double hits a little. A difference of 10 to 25 velocity points is enough to make the part feel more played. If the sample isn't mapped for velocity to change tone, it still helps the performance feel more alive. If you want extra movement, you can automate very subtle changes over the track. For example, maybe the crunchy layer gets a touch louder in the second 8 bars of the drop, or maybe the saturation gets a little dirtier later on. That kind of gradual shift can make the loop feel like it's evolving instead of just repeating. Now bring in your bass line or sub and listen to the interaction. This is the point where the lesson really becomes drum and bass. The kick and bass are not separate ideas. They're part of the same rhythmic engine. A good DNB bass line usually leaves space for the kick, answers it, or comes in just after the transient. If the bass and kick fight, don't just turn things down and hope for the best. First check the tail length, the note placement, and the frequency overlap. Ask yourself 3 questions while listening. Does the kick still punch through? Does the bass feel crowded or delayed? And does the crunchy layer help the kick read on smaller speakers? If the answer to the second question is yes, the problem is usually arrangement or overlap, not just mixing. Once the layers are working together, group them into a kick bus. On that bus, you can use a Q8 for tiny cleanup, drum bus for a bit of glue, or compressor if the layers feel disconnected. Keep compression light. We're not trying to flatten the kick. A ratio around 2 to 1, with a moderate attack and a relaxed release, is plenty if you need it. The bus should make the kick feel like one instrument, not squash the life out of it. This is also a great place to make the arrangement move. For example, you can bring in a little more crunch in the first bar of the drop, then ease it back slightly, so your ears don't get tired. Or in the breakdown, you can pull the texture layer down so the return hits harder later. In drum and bass, small changes go a long way. A few common mistakes to avoid here. Don't make the kick too long. If the tail hangs around, it will blur the groove and crowd the bass. Don't distort the whole kick, when only the texture layer needs grit. Don't overswing the kick. DNB still needs forward drive. Don't boost the click so much that the kick sounds sharp and cheap. And don't leave the crunch layer too loud. If the texture is the first thing you notice, it's probably too much. Here's a useful way to think about the whole process. If the kick feels small, don't immediately turn it up. Ask whether it needs more low mid mass, more attack, or a dirtier mid layer. That little mindset shift can save you from overprocessing. A really good beginner practice is to build a 4-bar loop. Use a clean kick in drum rack, duplicate it into a crunch layer, high pass the crunch at around 100 to 140 Hz at a little saturation, and then draw a pattern with at least one extra kick before a bass response. Nudge one kick a tiny bit early or late. Then add a simple bass line with just 2 or 3 notes and check the whole thing in mono. If you want to push it one step further, bounce the kick bus to audio and listen back like a DJ preview loop. That can reveal whether the tail is too long or whether the texture actually helps the groove. The big recap is simple. Build the kick from 2 layers, a clean body and a crunchy sampler texture. Use tiny timing shifts and subtle velocity changes to humanize the groove. Keep the crunch layer focused in the mid-range with EQ and saturation. Protect the sub by keeping the kick tight, mono, and low-end disciplined. And always check the kick against the bass line, because in drum and bass, the groove lives in their interaction. If you want, I can also turn this into a more energetic voiceover version, or make it sound like a calm step-by-step instructor read.